we open things up this afternoon by welcoming back to the program from Defector.com, the distraction. He's the lovely and talented David Roth. Hello there, David.
Hey, Rich. How are you?
I'm great. How are you this afternoon?
Pretty good. I was telling Carrie that I'd gotten like two or three things done by 4:05 p.m., so I'm calling this one a win, knocking off early.
For the week or just for today?
Oh, for today. I think I would have had to have done something more significant than doing a Twitch stream and editing a story for me to take the rest of the week off.
See, I would call that a good week, but I have a very low bar at this point in life.
Yeah, same. I appreciate that. That's why I keep getting to come on the show.
I want to talk about this guy from Washington State, Nick Rolovich. Oh, Lord. He's gone now. You wrote a wonderful piece on him before the university decided to go separate ways. I don't quite understand what his point was, if he had one, but maybe you've summed it up best, that he's got football guy brain.
I've been following that story. I mean, Washington State football is not a long-time obsession of mine. I guess I enjoyed the Drew Bledsoe era as much as anyone else, but I really can't say that I've cared that much since. In this case, in July, this guy, who's their coach now within his second year, said that he wouldn't be attending the Pac-12 media days. He was the only coach or player that wouldn't do it because he wasn't going to get vaccinated. He declined to say why. He didn't cite HIPPO like the real, like Dak Prescott did, the real hardcore guys. He said, in private, I won't address it. And he didn't address it, and he didn't get vaccinated. And as the mandate got closer and more people started pleading with him, including June Jones, who I remember fondly as a run-and-shoot architect in the NFL a couple of generations ago. Jones was Rolovich's mentor. He coached him in college at Hawaii. Like pleading in USA Today to be like, it's not just about you. There's a lot more riding on this. It just, nothing seemed to faze him. He didn't do anything. And then as that mandate rolled past, he was let go for cause. And he may or may not sue. He still hasn't really said anything about why it happened, but he had that kind of the weird way that people that are doing irresponsible things will talk about stuff as if it's weather, like as if the decisions that they're making are just kind of like it turning out to be breezier than expected. And he was like, well, you know how this is. Like, it's been a big distraction for the players, and that's sad, and it's tough that it turned out that way, without ever acknowledging that he had any agency in making this decision at all. So he seems like that's the football guy part of it. The way that like Matt Nagy, every time the Bears lose, like just in an embarrassing way, he's like, this one's on me, and I got to get better. And then like they lose the same way the next week, and he's like, I would say that we need to get better, and this one's on me. Like, this is kind of where Rolovich was, except for there was a public health element to it.
What's the end game for guys like that? Or is this just more of what we've seen so much of in every arena? Some of these people just like the fight. They just like being contrarians.
I think that there's an element of that. I mean, it was because he didn't talk about it. No one really knew. He's Catholic, as far as anyone knows. And there is like sort of, contra what the Pope said, there is sort of a faction of people that have, pursued a religious exemption to the vaccines, and that those exemptions almost never go through. And it doesn't, everybody knows that he filed for an exemption. No one knows the actual merits of the argument that he made. But I feel like in a lot of these cases, I feel the same when you see these videos of police officers doing these grandiose sign-offs because they, like state police officers, when they refuse to get the vaccine, and like after 24 years of defending people and locking up bad guys, and just like some dude that's got like half a burrito on his shirt, like with his seat tipped entirely back, and you're like, all right, well, this person thinks that they're the main character of reality and this is their big moment, that they're delivering the I am God Alec Baldwin speech from Malice or whatever. And that's not that everybody remembers Malice, but with someone like that, I mean, when you run into them in your daily life, like you can only just try to minimize your dealings with them. Somebody that's at that level of sort of delusional narcissism can't necessarily be counted on to make good decisions. They can make it as a football coach, but they can't if they're mandated to do anything.
Let's move on to the world of baseball, Major League Baseball. For a Mets fan, David, what's the worst possible World Series matchup?
I mean, it sort of is looking like the one that we're going to get, right? I mean, not to say that anything's over yet or whatever, but you've got the Red Sox, who basically did the sort of smart version of what the Mets did at the deadline in terms of retooling in multiple ways instead of putting all of your eggs in a basket that is Javi Baez. But also, like, they just, it's a better run organization, so there's sort of a torment element there for me, because they basically managed to whip up at a successful turnaround from, you know, an unnecessary, I still think, Mookie Betts trade in the time that it took the Mets to come up with three franchise humiliations over the course of just, like, the back end of the season. And then, you know, you got your Braves, and you have to listen to the damn chop on TV no matter what. They're both of those teams, I should say, are, like, if I wasn't entirely too familiar with watching them on TV during October, like, I think I'd be fine with that. Braves got a ton of stuff right and have played very tough and well above expectations. And Lord knows the Red Sox, I mean, I remember talking to you earlier in the summer about just sort of like, are they actually good, or is this just something that you should enjoy while it's happening? And that was what the Mets seemed like at the time, too. And it turns out the Red Sox are actually good. Like, much better than I would have expected them to be at this point in the High and Bloom experience, for sure.
Now, as for the Mets, have you given up on the new ownership, or are you still optimistic that they can figure things out next year?
So I'm not optimistic, but I haven't given up, which is very much the sort of Mets fan credo. But for me, I'm sort of leaning into a new perverse fascination with the ownership. The guy is very rich. He does not seem inclined to spend it in the way that I would want him to. But he has revealed himself over the last year, I think, as being like an exactly replacement level sport radio caller guy from New York. That he could be, you know, Steve from Maspeth calling in and just, you know, being like, Javi Baez, you know, he's embarrassing to me. Like, personally, I have a hard time with talking to my wife now because I think about Javi Baez. And, like, that's basically the mentality that's at work here, except for he has billions of dollars. And so there's nothing that they could do and no one that they could hire that I think would significantly make a difference, and that's frustrating. But also, it could be anyone. Like, it could be Danny DeVito could be the GM manager of the team next year, and I'd be like, well, that's interesting. I didn't expect it, but that actually fits with the general MO.
I liked your impression that clearly a time well spent listening to WFAN.
Yeah, that's my normal speaking voice, Rich. It's very difficult for me to keep it together with this non-regional diction that I use on the radio, and I'm trying to be polite.
Well, thanks for cleaning it up for AM radio in Bangor, Maine.
Oh, no problem.
NBA season getting underway. What's the over-under on the number of games Kyrie Irving will play?
Honestly, it feels like zero to me. I've gotten, so I stand to win $1 from Drew McGarry, my podcast co-host, when Kyrie does not take the floor in the first Nets game. But he's another, I mean, again, people that consider themselves to be the main character of history, like, he's got a lot more money than Nick Rolovich does and has a lot more riding on being Kyrie Irving than I think even Nick Rolovich does on being Nick Rolovich. It might just be that he doesn't want to play basketball anymore. I think he probably does. I mean, he's got a lot of good basketball left in him, and to the extent that anybody ever really knows what his thought process is, I don't think that he was intending to retire. But this feels like the sort of thing that he follows through to the end. Now, I don't know that he will actually do it. It might be at some point he gets bored, or, you know, he tries to do some sort of Ben Simmons-y half measure and, you know, like, plays with a mask on or something stupid like that. But I wouldn't put it past him to just bail on this entirely. I think that that really seems to be what he wants to do, and what Kyrie Irving wants to do is generally what Kyrie Irving does.
Well, and on the upside, it's going to free up a lot of time for him to prove that the Earth is flat.
I was going to say, this is like, in the annals of doing your own research, he is already, I think, one of the most distinguished scholars that I could possibly imagine. I mean, that just basically means looking at 10,000 posts and, like, watching a lot of, like, faintly Egyptological YouTube videos. But, man, he's really knocked that one out of the park twice now, right?
Yeah, he's got a TiVo full of In Search of Ancient Aliens.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, basically transforming into like an ancient alien scholar on his spare time, which is, you know, you got to respect that. That plus that ball handling is really elite.
That's the key. That's the combination there. One, taken separately, not so impressive, but when you put them together, that's the package.
Yeah, there's not very many people. It's a lot of people that can do one, not a lot of people that can do both.
Speaking of, odd ducks out there in the world, back to the world of politics a little bit, what do you make of this crazy senator from Arizona, Kristen Sinema?
Oh, I think she's terrific, Rich. I love her style. I can give you a dark answer and a less dark answer.
Okay. Oh, perfect.
I will opt for the less dark one, and then you can tell me if you want the actual depressing real thing that I think about her at the end. I think that there is something about her that is uniquely infuriating to people who are like maybe my age. Like, she's a few years older than me, you know, but somebody in their mid-40s that has that kind of like curated sort of look, like, this is my first experience of having somebody in a position of power, let alone in a position to completely just scupper a president's agenda right off the bat, who also looks like people that I didn't like in college. And I think that, you know, as I get older, there will be more and more of that. And already there's people where, you know, like, I didn't go to a good enough school that there was anybody that looked like Pete Buttigieg or acted like Pete Buttigieg there. But, like, there were a lot of Kyrsten Sinemas at Pomona College, and the vibe itself is kind of, like, just recognizing that again is sort of being like, all right, well, like, I don't think this person is going to do anything that makes me happy. They never have.
Now, was that the light or the dark version?
That's the light one.
Oh, dear. Let's go dark.
The darker one is that I think that what she really wants to do is to vote against this bill, and that there's nothing you can give her that'll make her not do it. Mm. And I think Manchin, who I think is a clown and not a very, especially talented clown at that, is also at least corrupt in legible ways. And therefore it's like, you could throw enough stuff at him, enough, you know, pro boss
right.
Legislation or enough tax breaks or whatever, that maybe he goes along with it. I think Sinema understands politics purely aesthetically, and that what she thinks she's doing is taking up John McCain's mantle, and that what she remembers about John McCain is not anything that he did legislatively, because there isn't, you know, there's some, but there's not that much. That what she remembers is Maverick, no one told him what to do, and the dramatic thumbs down vote against repealing the Affordable Care Act. And so that what she thinks honoring John McCain is doing the thumbs down. And that everything that preceded that, anything that supported it or didn't support it or that undergirded it in any way, is of no concern to her. That's the darker one. I can go back to talking about her glasses if you'd like.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right on both counts. It's so strange because usually people like her are in the House. They don't usually get to the Senate because somewhere along the way, the strangeness is I know, it's softened. The edges are smoothed out a little bit, and they learn to be just sort of casual, old-timey kind of racist and retrograde.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, that there is like a category error there. Because like the House of Representatives, and I gather that it's worked like this forever, I think that a lot of the people that are there are elected basically because everyone in their district wants to ensure that they won't be in the district a lot of the time.
Right.
And so that like sending Marjorie Taylor Greene to Washington, like, it's not ideal, but the alternative is that you see her at the mall. You know? So like you have to make a choice. Like
where can she do less damage? Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Whereas, I think with Sinema, it's a similar sort of deal. It's just that, like, I mean, but again, they, you know, Schumer handpicked her to run for that seat.
Right.
And she was able to win it. I just don't think that there was ever any commitment there to, like, you know, I can't tell what her sort of values ever were, but whatever it was that they seemed like they were, at this point, it seems like it's mostly her life is a Kyrsten Sinema fan account. That's pretty much it.
Did you see the former, well, as I like to call him, the president's heartfelt condolences about Colin Powell?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on that. It's I like hearing less from Trump as a general rule, but
yes.
When the only things that you get from him are these weird encyclicals from Florida where he, you know, like somebody dies and he's like, oops, looks like they died. They were very rude to me when they were alive. Like, that version of him is funny to me. I just, like, until I know that that person with that mindset is not going to be in charge of, like, my well-being again, it's hard for me to laugh at all the way. But yeah, like that whole, I mean, again, it's just sort of classic Trumpy stuff where like he's Colin Powell and he's like, he used to get great ratings, but now he doesn't. Like that's basically his understanding of this like rich and polarizing and crime strewn American life, is that he was like, he was hot in the 90s, but you know,
I miss that part of him. That's the only thing I miss is that consistency, that everybody knew what the response would be from him to Colin Powell's death. And then he still managed to top himself with it, because I think what the last line was, but rest in peace anyway, I guess.
Yes, it's like, well, anyway. Yeah, there's anytime you're putting a well anyway in your like obituary or your valedictory for someone, it means like, if you're going off topic, it's five sentences, and it's about the guy who died. Like, there's not room to slip a sentence in there to be like, I don't agree with the Aaron Boone extension, but, oh, right, anyway, back to Colin Powell. Only he can do that.
Oh, goodness gracious. David Roth from Defector.com. Always a treat for us to talk with you, my friend. Well, anyway, we have to move on. Thank you, David.
Good to be with the Colin Powell. Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Check out David's work at Defector.com, The Distraction, and more.